Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy John Couch, John engineering and producing our show. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster program on this Tuesday, the 11th day of August, 2020. We are praying for rain. Boy, do we need it. 10% chance. That's not much, but we'll take it. We're trying to bring people together every day, and I think we do a very good job with that here in Southern Arizona on the radio and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Of course, we have all of our programs archived for you at buckmastershow.com. You can also listen at buckmastershow.com to the live stream of our program. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by our friends at Rincon Venture, Real Estate and Property Management. Today we resume our every other month interview series presented by Pima Community College. We introduce our listeners to the talented and dedicated educators of Pima Community College. Joining us on the live line, Dr. David B. Dr. B. is the Pima Community College Executive Vice President of Finance and Administration. Dr. B., how are you today?
I am doing well. How are you doing?
Doing real well. Want to talk about Proposition 481. This will be on the November 6th ballot. I want to kind of let our listeners learn about this. Many of them, for the first time, I'm sure, didn't realize that there is going to be a proposition on the ballot concerning Pima. What is this all about, Dr. B.?
Yeah, that's a great question. So back in May, our board approved a resolution to put in front of the Pima County voters the proposition, which became Proposition 41, which basically is asking the voters of Pima County to consider a change to our expenditure limitation base level. For those who are unfamiliar with expenditure limitation, it is a set of laws that the primary one is constitutional, that constrains the amount of tax-based revenues that local governments, those would be school districts, cities, counties, and then for us, community colleges, can spend on operations. And it's based on a formula that is calculated each year for the upcoming fiscal year. And the way that the formula works is it's based on spending levels that were set back in 1980. That 1980 level has been adjusted for changes in enrollment since 1980, and then it has an inflation measure adjustment as well. And so the issue and what is the challenge for the college is that because it's based on the 1980 expense levels, the college had just before that gone through budgetary cuts. And so what happened is that we've been saddled with an expenditure limit level that is the lowest per student spending level of any of the Arizona community colleges. In fact, it's quite a bit lower than any of the others. Our base spending level per student was $1,728 per full-time student equivalent. And that's compared to the average of the other community colleges, including Pima, actually, the average of the community colleges, which is $2,768. So we have a base level and an expenditure limit level per student that's about 40% lower than the average community colleges in the state. And this has become a challenge increasingly as enrollments have slowed down due to population characteristics and college going characteristics have slowed down and exacerbated by the fact that the inflation measure is has also not increased as much as either consumer price index or the higher education price index, which is
People see these propositions, they worry about increase of taxes. Is that involved here?
No, that actually is a fantastic question. And what it is it's a constraint on what we can spend. There are other laws that govern how much we can draw in from property taxes. And so this actually does not directly affect taxes at all. What it does is it enables us to better spend the revenues that we already are receiving and direct them to operations. So those are the things that you would think about, the direct costs of education, replacing instructional technology, classroom equipment, training equipment, those kinds of things. Those are the kinds of things that, that typically are operational expenses, salaries for faculty and staff. And so what we have is we have a constraint on how much we can spend. And what we're looking to do is increase that constraint so that we can direct more money to really directly impacting education and services for the community. And it does not have a direct impact on taxes. It will not increase taxes.
And the state formula for funding to community colleges, at least for Pima, was cut off in 2015.
Correct. Yeah. And this actually, it helps us better spend the property tax revenues that we already receive. The other thing that it will do is if the state were to increase state funding or add us back into the operation formula, we would be able to spend that money for operations. It's a sort of an ironic situation that if the state turned around and started funding our operations again, we would actually have a limit in terms of how much of that state funding we could use for education. And this will remedy that problem.
Hit on some of the highlights, if you would, of what would be included. What kind of expanded role would you be able to spend to kind of bring some things up to date?
Yeah, that's we'll have more information is available on our website and also in the voter information pamphlet that will be going out to all the households, registered households in Pima County soon. But to boil it down, there's a bigger list than I'm going to go through here. But basically, it will give us funding to ensure that the centers of excellence that we're building and the classrooms throughout the district are properly equipped with current technology and current workforce type technology, which is extremely expensive. We don't want to train students for the workplace on equipment that's outdated that they won't see in the workplace. And similarly, we want to create the experience where people are shown and experience proper technology in the classroom so that they're digitally fluent entering, whether they're going on to transfer education onto a four-year institution or whether it's into the workforce. So that's the first set is directly connected to the classrooms. Second is that it will increase our capacity for high demand programs. Our programs, nursing and aviation, are constrained in terms of the space that they have, but also in terms of how many students we can have flowing through, and this will give us the ability to expand those programs and meet that demand so that people don't have waiting lists, don't have to sit on waiting lists for those strong career-based programs that people come in and get trained pretty quickly for very, very well-paying and strong career opportunities. We're planning to fully integrate digital technology throughout the curriculum. And we've actually piloted and we received some money through the CARES Act that we dedicated to this, to starting up a program where students in certain programs will be given mobile technology. And then the expectation is that they'll take that into the classroom and that technology will be integrated in their classroom experiences. Now, it's going to be a little bit delayed with some of our programs because of the pandemic situation. But the idea is that we have a big initiative to integrate digital technology and strive for digital fluency for all of our students throughout the curriculum. The last area is to enhance student support services. So we're looking to enhance our childcare support service. We just had an initiative for this upcoming year to provide our student success courses with no tuition charge. And so this would enable us to continue that kind of a program and then increasing our advising for students. So really focusing on ensuring that when students come to the college, that we are committed to their success and we will provide them the resources they need to be successful, whether that's mobile technology, better advising, or student success courses that give them life skills or study skills, those kinds of things to ensure that their success.
Oh, a lot of bang for the buck there, isn't there, Dr. B?
We have really, I think, shifted the college toward student success in the last number of years, and we've made great strides, and this will really take us to that next level. Otherwise, if it doesn't pass, we're running the risk that we're going to start having to cut back on some of our programs, reduce operational expenses. And I think that you can expect that there will be larger tuition, larger than we've had in the past tuition increases.
And again, this is Proposition 481. It will be on everybody's ballot here in Pima County, correct?
Yes, it will be. It's a countywide election. We're looking forward to folks supporting the college. We're committed to providing premier education to the community, and hopefully our voters will come out and show support for us.
Folks can get more at pima.edu. Is that the best place to go?
Yeah, there's a good FAQ site on pima.edu, and then we cannot advocate on behalf of the initiative. There is a group in the community called Yes on Prop 80, 481, and they have information there as well.
Dr. David B., thank you very much, sir. Executive Vice Chancellor of Finance and Administration. Stay safe. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, Dr. David B., the Pima Community College Executive Vice President of Finance and Administration. You can find out more by going to pima.edu. And again, that is Proposition 481 that really will help out Pima Community College on the November 6th ballot, that everybody in Pima County will have that in front of them and will hopefully make a decision in favor of Pima Community College. We'll take our break right here. It's the Buckmaster Show. Shelley Fishman's coming up next, and he's given me kind of a neutral thumb that goes sideways, which means, maybe up, maybe down. We'll be right back.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And welcome back in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, the Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, when I was looking at those numbers this morning out of Wall Street, I thought, hey, we got a little momentum here after yesterday. We were really going to town.
Well, the problem is it's Tuesday.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot.
And the investors ignored that it was Tuesday until 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, they thought, well, the Buckmaster Show's on right now out on the Pacific time zone. Yeah. Maybe we better head south.
So we're south on the NASDAQ, wow, over 1%, and the Dow, which was up, I think, about 300 points earlier, is now, you know, relatively flat. So it's not going in the right direction for the day.
And however, knows why
let's take a look at these large companies, the Dow and those in the S&P 500. Have done extraordinarily well, despite what's going on in the world, you know, according to the pandemic.
Have we come back from the high point early in 2020? Have we recovered?
Well, the NASDAQ certainly has. The S&P and the Dow have almost recovered. In fact, what I looked at this morning, we were, you know, north of 28,000. For the Dow, and I think intraday we had hit 29 something as a high point in January. So the short answer to your question is almost.
Well, back in those very bleak days of March, if I had said to you, Shelley, well, yeah, it's real bad right now, but I think maybe 4 or 5 months we'll be back to where we were.
I would have said you're crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, we may have even talked about it, and you might have said, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but a recovery like this could take, I don't know, years maybe?
Well, keep in mind, this is not the economy.
I know.
This is the industrial averages.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing here is the effect of tax cuts. We're seeing the effect of
stimulus,
tremendous stimulus. And I mean, you know, when Obama approved a $700 billion stimulus to get us out of the Great Recession,
sure,
that was considered just the most tremendous thing that had ever been done. Who could imagine so much money? And, you know, now we've done $2 trillion
now
and
we
are talking about $3
trillion
more.
Enough.
Right, exactly.
They're printing it 24/7, I'm sure. And it's not just the U.S., but that's probably going on in central banks everywhere.
So what's propping up the markets is the hope that that kind of stimulus will continue from central banks worldwide and that the system of trade that we have in the international linkages won't get any worse.
Can you explain briefly what happened with these executive orders over weekend? Is this going to make much difference?
Well, some of them are clearly unconstitutional. Some of them are going to, you know, result in lawsuits instantly. The one that the president can probably get away with is the one that is the least meaningful. And it's the one where payroll taxes will be suspended until the end of the year. Now, what are payroll taxes? Payroll taxes are a total of about 12% of people's salaries that are withheld and paid to the government to pay for Medicare and Social Security. The employer pays half, so about 6%. The employee pays half, about 6%. Now, it's great, you know, if that money isn't being withheld, The problem is, under the current executive order, that money has to be repaid at the end of the year.
Oh, so this is not a tax holiday.
It is not a tax. Well, it's, yeah.
Well,
right.
I mean, it's a holiday.
It's a holiday without a gift.
With, at the end game, is still you're going to have to pay it back.
Right. Now, yeah, you know, Trump has said, well, if he gets reelected, then he'll try to find a way to forgive
it. To keep it going.
But that's really a problem. So a couple of things. Number one, if you've currently got a job and you're paying payroll taxes, that's great. So you probably don't need the relief as much as people who don't have a job. Mm-hmm. So that's why both Republicans and Democrats kind of turned this idea down in the discussions they were having about the bills that would be made available to provide the next round of relief. The amount of money, let's say you're only making $30,000 or $40,000 a year. The amount of money between now and the end of the year that you would come away with is about $35 a week. Now, that ain't nothing, but it's not a lot of money. It's not going to make a big difference in terms of stimulating the economy. Mm. So if you're an individual, you don't come away much helped.
But you got to pay it back.
And you got to pay it back. But even if you didn't, you don't come away much helped.
No.
And what will most companies do? What they'll do is they'll continue to withhold the money and put it into a trust fund, wait to see what happens at the end of the year. So this isn't a really good idea. However, if you're politically adverse to Medicare and Social Security, this is a great idea. Because what will happen is it will give an excuse to those people who hate those two socialist programs to say, these programs are going bankrupt. Why? Because we're not taking money out of people's paychecks anymore, and we have to fix it. And the fixes are really troublesome. Now, look, Social Security is in trouble. Mm-hmm. Social Security, we knew would be in trouble. The fix during the mid-80s helped it for about 50 years. We know that something has got to be done. We don't know quite how to do it because, quite frankly, it's the third rail of politics.
Yeah.
What it means is that anybody who raises their hand and says, we've got to add a year to the retirement age and stop the cutoff at, what is it, 127?
It's political suicide.
It's political suicide. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, if Social Security were to start cutting back on payments because it was broke, that'd be a problem. What the Secretary of the Treasury Mnuchin has said is, well, just take it out of the general fund, which means it's got to be refunded every year in the budget process. You know that that's going to politicize the thing. And that's what Republicans and those people who want to see Social Security and Medicare dead, that's what they want. They want to be able to have a shot at this every single year. And so when I heard what was going on, I said, wait a second, the tell here is not what Trump did, but what Mnuchin said afterwards, which is we'll just take it out of the general fund. And that is very dangerous. Now, Social Security, the fixes are fairly straightforward, hard to do, but straightforward. Medicare is even more complex because we don't know what's going to happen with Medicare. If, say, Biden gets elected, we know he's not going to go for Medicare for all, but he has talked about lowering, not raising, but lowering the Medicare eligibility age from 65 to 60. Well, that changes the finances massively. And so we don't even know what a fix really means right now. That's going to have to be determined.
I don't know where to begin. So, stimulus? Is there a hope for a stimulus?
I think there is. I think if the president has gained one thing by what he did over the weekend, is he made it very important for the Democrats and the White House to get together on a plan. It doesn't look like they're doing it, but the pressure now is all on the Democrats to at least stop just articulating that we're meeting them halfway and to really make a show of negotiating with Meadows and Mnuchin. We know that the Republicans aren't there, but if 10 votes on the Republican side in the Senate are there and the rest of the Democrats are there, they can get that past the Senate on what will be called a bipartisan vote that will be heavily reliant on Democratic senators.
How about money going back to people, $400 or $500 a month? The president was talking about. I know we've only got about less than a minute.
Yeah, what the president is talking about is the feds contributing $300 and the states contributing another $100, cutting it from a total of $600 down to a total of $400. That's problematic to begin with. But the states don't have the money, Bill. The states are already facing layoffs and cutbacks because of the pandemic. So this is just a political trick. And quite frankly, even if the states had the money, the systems are not in place right now to support how to do it.
That's what they're saying here in Arizona.
Not here in Arizona, but other places as well. So it really is, this is not the president's thing to do. This is the president's thing to sign once Congress does its job, and Congress has to do its job.
All right, Shelley Fishman, thank you very much. Shelley, always a pleasure to see you. We will see you next Tuesday at 12:15. Thank you. Have a great week.
You too, Bill.
All right, Buckmaster Show continues right after this.
CBS News special report, college football's Big Ten Conference has just announced it'll postpone its fall season to spring because of the pandemic. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis hopes his state's teams in other conferences will still play.
Whether you're somebody who's destined for the NFL or whether you're just somebody who's going to have a productive college career, taking that away, I think, would do lasting damage.
With more economic damage likely, the White House wants to use federal disaster relief funds to help the unemployed. CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
The White House appears to be engaged in some intense lawyering to make this work. In order to draw from the disaster relief fund, which by law requires states to take on 25% of the cost, the administration seems to be ready to give states credit for what they already pay in unemployment benefits. Top economic advisor Larry Kudlow says that means states won't have to put up an extra $100 a week to get the $300 drawn from the disaster relief fund.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Peter King.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen.
Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Buckmaster Show Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Green Things, my go-to place for everything green. And boy, right about now, we could all use something green in the backyard after a really, really dry summer. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. On their 13-acre site, you'll find everything you need for the garden and some beautiful items for your home in Zocalo Village. Come tour the five shops at Zocalo Village. The ZocaloVillage.com is the website. And, of course, GreenThingsAZ.com for Green Things. 50 years and still growing. Well, August 20th, 1776 is the marking of the founding of the Presidio here in Tucson. Let's welcome now on the live line our Buckmaster Show historian, Ken Scoville. Ken, how are you?
Hi, Bill. I am fine. People sometimes get the dates mixed. 1976 was the bicentennial. 75 is actually Tucson's birth date. But and that's something we can talk about. Those two dates and actually intertwined quite a lot.
Yeah, okay. So that, of course, was the founding, the European kind of founding, officially, of the Presidio by the Spanish. But, of course, people have been living, when you talk about founding of Tucson, you'd have to go back a couple of thousand years.
Right. Around 4 years, you talk about 4,000.
This year will be a very subdued birthday. In fact, I don't think there are any events planned, are there?
Right. I went on and checked and looked, and I'm afraid this is sort of the kickoff of closed events and celebrations we're going to have the next 6 to 12 months, maybe. Well, you start thinking about it, and it's sad to think about probably no Winter Haven, you know, all the national events that are being canceled, so.
Yeah, and of course the Day of the Dead ceremony and all that in November. Who knows? I know they haven't made a decision about whether or not it'd be virtual, but it wouldn't surprise. Maybe they have made a decision, but
I think maybe just the final event's going to be online.
Okay.
Virtual.
Let's talk a little bit, Ken Scoville, about the preservation activists in this community. How far back does it go?
Well. The real founding of the preservation movement in Tucson goes back to really when urban renewal began in 1965. And two key people would evolve and champion the cause, Aline Smith and Alva Torres, both from two different backgrounds. Aline actually came here from Iowa and started renting the Sam Hughes home. She moved in 1952, and by 1962, the city said, you're going to have to move because we're going to tear the house down. And so she sort of jumped into the deep end of preservation, and Alva Torres really got involved because she was a native Tucsonan that was concerned about what was happening with urban renewal.
Were they talking about the bicentennial at that point?
Well, the way things evolved, that they both got together and they're able to communicate. Aline really was dealing with the nuts and bolts of how to fight City Hall, and Alva was really very good at communicating and getting people that were concerned together. So those two worked together to achieve tremendous amount of preservation, the historic districts we have downtown, and all this led to them becoming, championing the idea of a 200 year celebration, and also that would evolve into their main participation with the event and structuring it and making people realize how important this was to celebrate Tucson's past, what we're doing right now in the present in 1975, and what the future will be like in Tucson.
It's kind of interesting. You sent along to me a program from the bicentennial celebration here in Tucson, and there was a full page ad for Seal Peterson's dress stores. That was fun.
Yes, and Seal, I think the reason I sent you that is she's sort of the transition person. Seal was always a booster of Tucson, and when Aline Smith died way too early in 1980, in fact, there's a memorial park for her and the Elvis in the Historic District, but she essentially saved that neighborhood among other efforts. And so, but Seal would be the person to sort of reinvigorate our birthday celebration along with Carlotta Flores before the turn of the 20th century in the late 1990s. Gosh, that sounds strange, doesn't it? The late 1990s?
Yes.
Because I was involved with those things. But anyway, so Seal is really a transition person. All the way up to like the day before she died, she was constantly boosting and doing that. So we can think of really Seal and Carlotta, but Seal later on championing the idea of celebrating Tucson's birthday every year.
And of course, the 250th celebration of Tucson's birthday, you would think this would be a very big deal, and maybe it will be. It's not that far away, 5 years away, 2025.
No, and I think what's going to be interesting is that I would imagine the same effect that happened in 1975 with our birthday in 76, the nation's 200th birthday. I would not be surprised to see those two things align again. That is, we're working for the 250th, that nationally we will be working towards the 250th birthday of the country. So I would expect that alignment to happen today. But like the nature of planning, and I think Tucson's always a little late on things, it is not too early to start thinking about this, especially the reality that nothing's going to happen this year. I'm going to probably plan to call the newspaper and encourage them to maybe pull out some pictures from 1975 and publish those so people become a little aware of how this birthday celebration started. And I also sent something with you about the flag-raising ceremony. Every year, since 1975, all the flags that once flew over Tucson were, again, brought in, and we had a proclamation and all the things. And it got sort of all the same, but since it's not happening this year, I even find myself missing it. Even though every time I've gone every year, I said, oh, we got to mix it up or change around. But I find myself missing it now.
Was there some controversy about the Confederate flag being at the ceremony?
Oh, yeah. In more recent years, but back in the 70s, no. But more recent years. And I always used to say to Tom Peterson, who was a former honcho over at the Arizona Historical Society, because Esteban Ochoa, who was our early mayor in Tucson, he rode out of town on horseback with one rifle and was willing to face the Apaches rather than stay and see Tucson become part of the Confederacy. So I always said to Tom, because we're the only two people to laugh about this, that Esteban Ochoa wouldn't believe that we were bringing in a Confederate flag. But anyway, yeah, that's been sort of controversial, and I imagine maybe we won't be bringing it in or we'll acknowledge it but not bring the flag in. But
all right.
It is what it is,
and no ceremony this year. Ken, thank you very much. Ken Scoville.
Sure. I'll see you later.
Thanks a lot. Ken Scoville, the Buckmaster Show historian. We've got Margaret Regan coming up from the Tucson Weekly talking about the performing arts, a lack of the performing arts, and what an impact that's having on our community as we continue with Buckmaster on this Tuesday afternoon. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the Buckmaster Show live line presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. The Buckmaster Show also gets support, and we're so thankful for our friends over in Silver City and Grant County. Time to start planning now to visit Silver City so you're ready when the land of enchantment, New Mexico, is once again open to out-of-state visitors. We're hoping that day comes very soon. For more on things to do and places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now the longtime arts writer for the Tucson Weekly, Margaret Regan, who really has been writing about the arts. Let me see, 1990, this is for 30 years. Wow. Margaret started writing about the border 20 years ago and has really put together two prize-winning books on immigration, Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire, the most recent, and that the prior book was called and is called Death of Jocelyn, Immigration Stories from Arizona-Mexico Borderlands, and both books are still available, very popular, and you can obtain those through your favorite online source. Margaret, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Bill.
Yeah,
for Hanging in like everybody, I guess.
Everybody, and the weekly article is appropriately titled Stage Fright. The curtain has gone down. I like this headline. For the rest of 2020, it's curtains for certain at Tucson's concert right. halls. I mean, yeah. it's a catchy little title, but right. it's really bad news
right.
for our
yeah.
for our performing arts friends, isn't yeah. it?
Oh, for sure. Just let me give a shout-out to Jim Ninsel, my editor. He's very clever with his headlines. I told him that. Curtains for certain.
He's a wordsmith. He really is.
He is, yeah. So, okay, things are just bad all over in Tucson as far as the arts. This was a story about the performing arts, not about the museums per se this time. But, you know, back in the spring of March, you know, when everything went dark immediately, you know, everything shut down, the symphony, the Fox, the Rialto, Club Congress, you know, all the stuff at UA Presents. Everybody was thinking, okay, we can do this. You know, this is going to be a short-term thing, maybe a month. We all have to stay home and can't see any shows. And things will be better in the fall. And, you know, it's all just fallen apart this summer. You know, the Fox, I think, was the first one to announce this summer, like, this is not happening this fall. You know, they had planned a whole new schedule for fall. And the new director there, Bonnie Schock, said, if you recall, end of June, early July, that's when we were really hit with the coronavirus here in Arizona. And we were making national news for being a hotspot. And she's saying there's no way we're going to be able to open in September. And one of the things that she was explaining to me when I talked to her is that really that whole industry is dependent on traveling artists. And you know what? Right now, artists are not traveling around and risking their own lives, you know, to come to Tucson and other places to perform. So, you know, with the greatest hope, she's planning on reopening in January.
Well, that's what everybody's kind of gearing to, 2021, where hopefully there'll be a vaccine. And you could see that people would be required to show proof of vaccination before buying a ticket to a performing arts center, before buying an airline ticket. But mm-hmm. still, it will maybe get things going again. That's what I think the hope is.
Well, that's the hope, yeah. But, you know, Tucson Symphony Orchestra has already scotched the whole thing, the 2020-21. So they're not going to be performing any time before a year from now. And like a lot of them, you know, in the in-between, they're trying to do things. The music director, Jose Luis Gomez, is going to have some online programs. And some of those will feature the artists from this symphony. Arizona Opera also has reimagined its entire season, but they are trying to do a few live things. They're claiming right now, or they're planning right now, October 4th, they're going to have some of the advanced students that work at Arizona Opera. You know, it's a pretty pretty good organization. You know, they have this whole fellowship for young artists, young singers. And they're really good, and they sometimes are in the regular operas. So supposedly they're going to be performing outdoors someplace in Tucson on October 4th, and that's the earliest commitment I've heard of anybody doing anything. So we'll see, you know, as time goes on, whether that will happen.
And events are being canceled. The Day of the Dead event, I'm sure, is canceled, right?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
So what happens now? We had the Tucson Museum of Art reopening, kind of a ticket-only type thing. Mm-hmm. So that's good news that we're getting, you know, people can go to the museum again.
Right. Now, I haven't been there myself. I told myself I'm going to wait a little bit, you know. It opened the weekend of the 4th of July, I think it was.
No, I think they just reopened the end of July.
Oh, you're right. That was the original plan.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. And then I think it's about 2 weeks now. Mm-hmm. So I need to call them and see how it's going. They were going to be very strict. You know, you have to, as you said, you have to get your ticket in advance. They were going to have all the hand sanitizers everywhere, you know, masks and social distancing. And it's a big cavernous building, so I can see how they could do that. But the other museums, you know, the ones that I follow the most, you know, Mocha is still closed. Although they have a nice project. They're opening, not opening, but they hired an artist to do a giant outdoor mural on their building, and that's going to be up pretty soon, I think, if not already. So that gives us something to do, but in theory, you know, they're going to be opening the museum in September. And, our beloved, the museums at the University of Arizona, the University of Arizona Museum of Art, as well as the Center for Creative Photography. Now, what's happening with them, I'm not sure, you know, because the campus has been in lockdown, and it will be opening pretty soon, and I don't know yet if they will open those museums when the school opens to students.
We had an interesting conversation with Fletcher McCusker on the show Friday, kind of reimagining or imagining how this is all going to play out. He believes that initially your audience will be younger people that might want to feel more comfortable about taking, getting together to see a live performance. Yeah. So and some of the older folks may want to wait. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And, of course, there are these tremendous financial implications. Fletcher was talking about the financial implications for the Fox.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I mentioned, I talked to the new director, Bonnie Schock, and she said, you know, typically 75% of their budget comes from things like ticket sales. Well, they don't have any ticket sales right now. I mean, you can buy a ticket if you want for the first show scheduled for February, but I'm imagining that not too many people are shoveling out the money for that at this time. So there's just no cash coming in, and, you know, almost all the staff has been furloughed or let go for the time being. So it's a huge financial disaster. A man from Ballet Tucson said, you know, this is critical. Ballet Tucson, you know, all these things that I've been writing about really for 30 years, as you mentioned, sort of taking for granted that Tucson was this very arty city with so many things to see all the time. And some weekends I get mad. There's too many shows I have to go to.
now you wish you had one to go to.
I know. And we just don't know it, you know, a ballet company, you know, that's tough, you know, to get enough funding for that. And I don't know. I would think the bigger ones might be on firmer ground, like the Tucson Symphony Orchestra, possibly. That's a pretty big organization.
I wanted to ask you about Hotel Congress. Is the hotel still closed?
Yeah, the whole place is dark. Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't know if you read the story. They kind of went back and forth. They were closed, and then Ducey said people could open various businesses. That was kind of, I think it was May 15th, or that roundabout then. And they didn't open right away. They just thought, yeah, we're going to take it easy. We're going to wait a couple of weeks, and that's what they did. And they did open the hotel in early June, and they put the Cup Cafe outside. And, of course, the music hall inside was not being used, but they started having performances outside among the tables. So that was nice. But then this whole thing hit late June, and they closed everything, the hotel, you know, the whole nine yards. And they just said, you know, our health and the health of all of our patrons is the most important thing here. And so legally they could be open right now.
Are they thinking about a reopen for mid-September?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which means they're going to skip their famous Labor Day weekend HOCO event, you know, which people really love. That's usually a whole weekend thing of lots of different artists. So we'll see. Mid-September, that's what they're thinking.
All right. Margaret, thank you very much. Margaret Regan, Tucson Weekly Arts Writer. Always a pleasure. Stay safe. We will talk to you. Where the year has gone, September will be our next visit. Thank you very much, Margaret.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Margaret Regan from the Tucson Weekly. That's going to do it today for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of John Couch, engineering and producing the show, he always does a great job for us. Of course, all of our programs, if you miss anything, they're all available at buckmastershow.com, where we have all of our podcasts and a pretty darn extensive archive of all of our programs from the Buckmaster Show. That's going to do it in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Dave Ramsey, his very popular show on Your Money, is coming up next. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI Cortero, AM 1030, the voice of Tucson. Trusted local news and talk. A Bustos Media Station.